What is up, wrestling fans? Welcome to another pay-per-view point edition of the Smart Out Moment Smack Talk podcast, where we're going to be breaking down the 2024 AEW Revolution pay-per-view. Just got through the Elimination Chamber stuff. We're on the road to WrestleMania, but we got to take a pit stop and talk about one of the biggest events in AEW per year, and also one of the biggest events, you know, as far as like historical purposes in wrestling, with Sting's retirement match here. It's going to be an interesting pay-per-view. We got a lot to break down here. And of course, we're going to be giving you our preview in full with our predictions for all the matches and the hype levels that we're at for these different matches. What else do we think they're going to add to the card, and so on and so forth. If you don't know who we are, I'm Tony Mango, joined as always by Robert E. Felice.
Hello.
And Callum Wiggins.
But you won't fool the children of the Revolution.
This reference is lost on me.
Yeah.
It's a T-Rex song.
What's the song?
Children of the Revolution.
Children of the Revolution. Let me Google this real quick. Children of the Revolution.
I very much appreciate when Callum throws in the reference.
I don't know if I would know this by hearing it, because the lyrics, I'm not.
Completely went over Tony's head.
Completely went over my head. I don't even know if I.
I don't want to like sing it, because I don't want to get like copyright strike or something on this. Not that my voice would typically pull it off, but it just goes like, but you won't fool the children of the revolution. No, you don't.
I'm still drawing a blank.
they should make this the theme of this thing, is what I'm saying. If they won't, then it's zero stars.
Yeah.
They should.
Well, there you go. You got, instead of an outro for this one, you got a little bit of an intro.
An intro.
Well, of course, we also want to know what you guys have to say about this stuff and all the things we're going to be talking about. And, you know, give us your best T-Rex song. And Mark Bolan, I guess, is also the person in this. I'm Googling that right now. You know, drop your thoughts in the comment section below on YouTube. While you're over there, click on the like button, click on the join button, get access to the same stuff as you have on the Patreon, like the Darkcast, Pick Poison tier, and all that stuff. Hit the thanks button if you want to toss a little spare change our way. Double check that you are subscribed. Ring that notification bell as well. Get those email alerts set up for when we go live for the post show immediately following AEW Revolution. Pick up some Redbubble and TeePublic merchandise. Check out that Discord server that we've got over there on, well, on Discord. I don't know why I need to specify that. Yeah, you know, all that good stuff that we normally mention here. I'm not going to bog this down too much. We got 9 matches already scheduled for this, though that typically doesn't mean too much, because there are the complete opposite side of things in AEW when it comes to WWE. WWE, look at what they just did for Elimination Chamber. They had, what, an hour and a half worth of matches, and then 3 hours worth of nonsense, and 4 matches on that card or something. And this one is, you know, I'm sure going to eventually go into that somewhere like 12 to 14 match range. It's usually how Tony Khan tends to book these things. And we also know that none of these matches have yet been clarified as a pre-show 0 hour match. So normally that means at least one, if not 2 or 3, matches will be added to that too. So the first question, of course, what do you guys think is going to be added to this card?
Hook versus Brian Cage immediately springs to mind.
Yeah. Yep, and some FTW rules match. That'll probably be on the 0 hour.
You can see that. It's one of the few belts that's not on the line right here.
Go out on a limb here and suggest Lionheart Chris Jericho against Kyle Fletcher for the Ring of Honor TV title.
Why Lionheart Chris Jericho?
Because Lionheart Chris Jericho is wrestling tonight.
I think they're just going to kind of keep that going.
I think that, I know that it's specifically because he's wrestling the partner of his old tag team partner when he was in Mexico, but something tells me that Jericho's got nothing to do, and granted, he's been away, so that makes sense. But Kyle Fletcher is also just not on this card, and he does have a championship. So if you wanted to, I think that's an easy stretch.
There are a couple other titles that aren't on the card, though. Like Julia Hart is not currently scheduled for this, although her injury status might be a little bit up in the air. There's the trios titles aren't on the line, so we could get something going on there.
The trios titles are on the line.
Yeah, they should just fight each other and merge.
I wouldn't be opposed to that. All the ROH belts, yeah, they're all potentially, you could always put them on here. I mean,
well, one of them is, technically.
Yeah, I guess technically, yeah, the Continental Crown. But they, you know, the Women's World Championship for ROH isn't, or the tag belts, or, you know, whatever. I could also see just some random matches that, like, that don't have any kind of titles or stipulations or anything. Like, we've seen plenty of pay-per-views where it's just sort of like, all right, it's Willow and Statlander in a tag match or something for the sake of getting them on the card.
Okay, I'm going to suggest Ring of Honor Tag Team Championship, Roppongi Vice versus Undisputed Kingdom.
Is Trent cleared to compete yet?
You know, I thought Chuck was the one that wasn't cleared to compete, so maybe not.
I thought Trent supposed to wrestle last week, but was pulled for some reason. But I don't know if that was travel related or injury related.
I thought, yeah, Sue wasn't cleared to compete.
I could see them doing a match with Serena D, because based on what they're doing on Collision, it's clear that she's going to be the first feud for Mercedes when she comes in.
You think it'll be a feud, or do you think it'll be like Punk and Darby?
It'll be a one-off match. I'd say feud, yeah, probably. The liberal use of the word feud there. Yeah. But I think it'll be her first match coming in will be against Serena Deep. So I can imagine they keep her.
Put her against Riho. Going. Riho's on Rampage. Put her against Riho.
Maybe. I mean, I think it's kind of arbitrary at this point. The matches that are going to be added to this card are not going to be the featured things anyway. So. He could probably look at this and just go, all right, which matches do I want to put on an upcoming episode of Dynamite? Which ones do I want to put on Rampage? Which ones do I want to put on Collision, ROH? Or which ones do I want to throw here? It might not be anything with any particular wow factor to it. Like, yeah, I don't, for instance, anticipate them being like, all right, well, we're going to have, we're going to create a brand new championship and put it on the 0 hour or something like that. But I think that there could be, you know, some ROH titles on the line, or there could be a trios match, or there could be, you know, the FTW title match that you were talking about. Like, I think that we're at least looking at two more matches being added to this card. I'd venture to say it's probably three. But we're also looking at some potential changes to this card too. So that might end up, you know, influencing that a little bit.
Fucking where?
Well, at least the main event.
Yeah, it worked.
Well, I mean, you mean the semi-main event?
Yeah.
Yeah, true. I'll put it that way. Yeah. And I, as far as I'm aware, there could be another person added to the Meat Madness thing.
There needs to be about 20 more people added to Meat Madness. I mean, for fuck's sake, you got Brody King around here. Where is Miro? Where is Miro? What is his job
description? He's off sitting in a cuck chair watching CJ.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
That kind of seems where like what that's going on.
I never heard of a cuck chair before.
Yeah, what the fuck? Oh, it's a T-Rex on it. Well, let's go into the Meat Madness match here. Let's start that off. It's currently Wardlow, Powerhouse Hobbs, and Lance Archer. But maybe I'm missing something here, but there's been no real clarification about what the hell this is and how this is going to play out.
According to Tony Schiavone on last week's Collision, it's just a three-way.
It's just
until they say otherwise.
And it's not for anything. There's no difference as far as, like, you know, you can't get counted out or like anything along those lines.
It's for meat, Tony. It's for meat.
I thought it was three way, not four way.
I hate you. I just, you know, there's a couple of things I want to talk about here, because this is Lance Archer's first pay per view match since Double or Nothing 2021, where he lost to, ironically, Miro, who's nowhere to be found right now. I think that's terrible. I think Lance Archer yes, he's up there in age now, but he should have been being utilized more. I think it's crazy that it's been almost 3 years without him being featured on a single show when you think about how we were just talking about how many arbitrary matches get added to these cards. Where's Lance Archer been?
Was he wrestling elsewhere, or was he injured for a portion of this? Because I feel like he probably would have been injured, right?
He's been in and out of injuries. He's obviously wrestled in New Japan in the interim as well. Like, he was part of the last year's World Tag League with Alex Zane. So
Meat sauce, badness, or something?
Monster sauce.
Monster sauce. Thank you.
Meat sauce is the mixture of this and be madness.
But I think that, I mean, it's a good spot for him to be in. He's kind of the one in this current triple threat which doesn't have real direction at the moment.
Right. This is just that's the other issue here. This is just a spotlight match for Will Hobbs.
It feels like a spotlight match for Wardlow.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. Which I think that's one of the weirdest things about this is, like, out of all the things for Wardlow to be doing right now, he's just like, yeah, let me just fight these other guys that are completely unrelated to anything.
Well, actually, you guys are right, because that's probably the weirdest thing about this whole card is the entire major angle that closed out the last pay-per-view means fuck all right now. And I'm not necessarily saying that's a problem, but it's definitely jarring if you're only keeping up from pay-per-view to pay-per-view.
I would say that it's, like, just from someone who does watch the week-to-week stuff, that it's not a bad thing. I think, if anything, forgetting a good deal about the Undisputed Kingdom has been more of a benefit if you forget that they exist. But, I mean, Wardlow cut that great promo. Was it last week?
It was last week, yes.
Yeah, last week. And it was the first time that I've probably cared about Wardlow since, like, mid-22.
Yeah, it was definitely the first time I cared about him since he beat MJF at Double or Nothing.
Yeah. I'd say, like, post-winning his first TNT title, that was, like, the peak for him, beyond, obviously, the MJF stuff. And now he's been meandering because he's in this weird situation where he's part of the Undisputed Kingdom because, obviously, they're anti-MJF. The MJF's not around at the moment because he's healing from his injuries. Or his contract ran out. Who knows? Of course, we know he's signed with AEW still. But
yeah. Well, you know what? The more time goes by, the more I'm just like, wouldn't it be great if like that was just never made official?
You know what ends up happening? MJF pops up in WWE on the same day that Drew McIntyre pops up in AEW.
And then, but I think that what it would be is, because he's part of this faction that is so closely related to his relationship with MJF, and Adam Cole is the front man of that group, but he's injured as well, basically means that he's in this weird vortex where they're trying to push him as a new world title challenger, but no one at the moment buys him as a world title challenger, so you need a match like this to help re-establish him, rather than just doing what they have been doing recently, which is just him squashing people, which was basically the start of his time in AEW, and is the thing they've always gone back to when they don't know what they're going to do with Wardlow.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's interesting because the Powerhouse Hobbs is also in a weird spot of being part of the Don Callis family, but being not one of the main members, or being kind of one of the middling guys of that group.
So they really are the same person right now, aren't they? They're basically dealing with the same issues.
Which is why it's interesting to put them into the match together to just see how... I mean, this match is the least, like, you know, story built of all the matches on this card. So, but, you know, I think considering the three names that are currently involved, if they do add more to it, it seems like it might be fun. I'm interested to see what Meat Madness actually means. If it is just a triple threat guy between three guys who are quite meaty.
That's what I'm thinking that it's going to be, which I kind of want there to be something a little extra to it. But I don't really know exactly what that would be, because it's not like it would make perfect sense for this to be like a last man standing match, or like a, you can't really do a battle royal with three people. Like, You know, it's not a big man buffet in that fashion, but like, I kind of want there to be something more to it other than it's just a three-way with three people that are completely disconnected from each other and happen to be big. Because at that point, I'd rather them just do the big man buffet. I'd rather them throw in Miro and, you know, Big Show and who else could they put in here? Satnam Singh and...
Bronson and Boulder.
Yeah, Bronson, Boulder. They could oversell like crazy in the match.
That's so bad.
that was ridiculous.
Was that Tommy Wansall or was that the other one?
No, they have real names.
I don't know whether it was Bronson or Boulder, but it might have been Tommy, actually.
Tommy's the one I was working with in OTW, which if that's the case, then good for him. throw in like Nick Camarado, throw it out and make it like an establishing match in that way. I'd rather be into it rather than just they happen to have nothing for these guys and they went, you're all big, so let's just do a regular three-way. But I'm still kind of more interested in that than I am one or two of the other matches that are.
Yeah, because this match is built for you. It's literally right out of your playbook when we do our booking.
Pretty much, yeah.
But I mean, there aren't many no disqualification matches on this card so far, or no ones that are kind of built around the idea of using weapons or anything like that. And when you throw in the phrase madness, you would assume there's some kind of no DQ element to it.
And so the triple threat being kind of inherently no DQ.
Oh, yeah. But I imagine that they might have, like, you know, pieces of meat.
Slabs.
slap the meat against each other.
It's, they're going to have those, like, things you see at, like, a meat locker hanging up.
Listen, the crowd's going to, like, chant meat, and everyone's going to get happy about it. That's, so I think like,
okay, and I agree with you, and you're right. Callum is 100% right, and that's the problem here, but I'm also kind of resigned to it. It's like, yeah, everybody's going to chant meat because they're literally just piggybacking off of the thing that happened that was it All Out, which was a long time ago now, but...
Which is also piggybacking off of Big E talking about Goldberg. I hope he gets some royalty checks for these things.
Look, Big E is fantastic, but I love that everybody's just embraced meat. It's fantastic, and it's fun, but I am a little... There is the small part of me that is annoyed that it's just like zero thought was put into this. You're just like, they're going to chant meat, and it's going to rule. And as long as this goes on early, it will. If this is like the 10:30 buffer, not sure.
That's the third brother alongside Michael and...
It
won't be the 10:30 buffer. It'll be the 10:30 buffet.
Okay, guys. All right.
Now the question I have: do you think any vegetarians in the crowd are going to be upset?
It depends on how far they go with Callum's thought of actually having meat around.
What would be the vegetarian version of meat madness?
It's the impossible meat.
Is there a V word that means like chaos or anything? Not off the top of my head, I can't think of any.
But, vegan viciousness.
There you go. I am thinking Wardlow's pinning Lance Archer here. How about you guys?
I'm going Wardlow winning as well.
I think Lance Archer better not go for a moonsault, but yeah, Wardlow's going to win.
Here's a match that I'm still kind of confused about exactly why they're doing it and the sort of purpose of where this is going to come out, unless it's one particular thing, which is, you know, we talk about Hobbs being kind of an odd man out with the Don Callis family. Kanosuke Takeshita is up against Will Ospreay, and the only thing I can imagine here is just to turn Ospreay babyface and get him out of the Don Callis family, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, why set it up the way that they set it up like that?
Because they set it up that he was in the Don Callis family, and now they need to undo that.
Yeah, that's the point is that Don Callis is, you know, super egotistic, as he always is, and so he says, okay, I'm just going to put, neither of my guys have matches on the card so far, so I'm going to put a match against each other, and they're all going to come together, and would just be, you know, us showing our superiority against each other, and then we all come together and still be family at the end of it. But what's going to happen is that Ospreay's going to beat Takeshita here, and he'll be beloved by the crowd because they're super excited to see him have his debut match as an official member of the AEW roster. And then Takeshita's going to beat the shit out of him, and that's going to launch into an actual feud between those ones, which hopefully will not involve Chris Jericho. But yeah, I probably will.
I like your way of thinking, man. That shouldn't involve Chris Jericho.
I mean, my most interesting thing about that, I mean, we'll talk about the match itself, but the more interesting thing is where Kyle Fletcher kind of will end up standing on this, because he was part of Ospreay's faction in New Japan with the United Empire, and now he's part of the Don Callis family. And if Ospreay turns away from the Don Callis family, does Fletcher follow him? Does he wait for Davis to come back and they reform their own trios group? And then in which case, who does Don Callis turn to replace the void those two leave in his family? Because they'll just leave him with Takeshita and Hobbs. Does he find someone else to come into that group as well? So there are all different directions they could take with this. But fundamentally, I don't know, like people say, it's the case of AEW just throw matches together. Yeah, if you can throw this match together, do it. Put it on a pay-per-view. I'm super excited.
No, I
wish that there would have been something more to it ahead of time, to be honest, because I know that more than likely that is the end result, is it's just going to be like, you know, Ospreay gets booted out of the group and they do all that, and that in and of itself is kind of the way that they're sort of pitching this, is it doesn't matter if it doesn't make sense right now, because it's going to make sense that why we did it from shut up, you know, it's fake and that's why we're doing it kind of. But I kind of wish that they could have used Ospreay in something ahead of this to build it. Like if he could have been like, I want to test myself against somebody or whatever, there's nobody to test myself against more against than Takeshita, or, you know, like some kind of a little bit of a preamble to it. But I guess maybe that might be part of the whole contract situation. I don't know.
Well, Ospreay was fulfilling his obligations to New Japan. Like he had his final match in New Japan a couple of weeks ago, in his final match on the UK independent circuit about a week or so ago. So, yeah, he's been doing all that stuff, and he will be on Dynamite tonight. So we'll see if that has any indication or any impact on steering this match one way or the other. But I just, yeah, you put in two of the best wrestlers currently around against each other in a match, and they'll go out there, and obviously Ospreay will want to steal the show on his very first night. So if you have Ospreay working at 90 to 100%, then there's not many better people out there. So I definitely think that this has the potential to be a match of the night, just based on the people involved. And they have been, while they haven't been quote-unquote pushing Takeshita hasn't lost a match in over a year in AEW. So it would be a big scalp for Ospreay in that respect to knock off Takeshita.
Would be even better if Takeshita didn't lose that match to Jericho.
True.
I had to get that in there because it is a bit frustrating. Now, this match is going to fucking rule, and I think it's a great shout for Takeshita to get right back in there and have people be like, yep, this is why you don't sleep on this guy. And then we start pushing him towards a championship.
Pretty long overdue at this point for him to win a title, right?
For sure. And honestly, we'll talk about another championship in a little bit, but if that doesn't change hands, I think I'd like Takeshita to go for the international title. This match, again, should be great. I'm kind of in the camp of, let's just pull the plug on the Don Callis thing. It's snake bitten. Omega's hurt. Jericho was away for forever. Let's just move away from Callis. It's not like a Powerhouse Hobbs can't get the job done. It's not like Takeshita can't get the job done. I kind of want to move away from it. That's just me.
No, I can kind of agree with that a little bit. I can kind of, this is going to give off the wrong impression. So let me specify. I do not want the hard reset that WCW did, because that's beyond stupid how they did
if
that.
If you did, I think we'd have to kick you out of this podcast.
Yeah, that would be rightfully served. But I kind of wish that there could be like a soft reboot in some ways for some of these storylines and some of the teams and some of the feuds. where I think they did. Well, like for, you know, the Don Callis situation and the Undisputed Kingdom, like I'd like to see, I don't know how they could pull it off. Maybe they do something where like another good set of feuds all happen very quickly. And then it's like within the span of 2 weeks, we kind of flip the switch on a lot of things. Cause there are a few storylines going on right now that I feel like are too disjointed, and you know, the Undisputed Kingdom, they don't have Adam Cole, so they're not able to wrestle, the MJF element's missing. So it's like, well, can we start a feud with them and somebody else, or can we kind of repurpose some of those people, or can we switch up the Don Callis family people and get some different guys in there? Or I kind of want something like that to happen with some of these. Some of them, of course, are perfectly fine exactly the way that they are, and they don't need to change a damn thing. But yeah, not that we can transition completely over to it now, but like Eddie Kingston and Brian Danielson are still feuding, and then BCC is feuding with the FTR, and like, what's the direction of BCC right now? You know what I mean?
They are the gatekeepers in the company, and they can and will fight anybody at any point in time. And you will like it because they are the best in the world at what they do.
Yeah, I mean, there's no need for Blackpool Combat Club to have a quote-unquote direction. They'll just fight anyone, and they'll get into feuds with anyone. They'll be baby faces 1 week, they'll be heels the next week. That's just how the BCC operate.
Well, as far as the Ospreay-Takeshita matches...
Ospreay's winning, yeah.
That's definitely going to be Ospreay. We're all in agreement that that's going to lead to him being excommunicated from that group or quitting the group. Actually, do you have a preference between that? Should he quit or should he be like beaten up and taken out?
He should quit, and he should take Fletcher with him.
I think he should get beaten up, even though it can be a bit of a dampener on his style. It does give more of a reason to launch into a bit more of a serious feud with the Don Callis family, if that's the route they're planning on taking. It'd feel like a little bit, I don't know, a bit wishy-washy if he was just to say, oh yeah, I'm not part of this group anymore, see you guys, and then just,
I mean, and then just go away. I mean, they then beat him up after that, but he needs to make the decision on his own leave.
I could see a situation where you can kind of have your cake and eat it too, where like Ospreay beats Takeshita. Takeshita gets mad, like pushes him or something. Ospreay's like, all right, well then, you know what? Fuck you guys. They attack him, and then maybe Fletcher comes out and helps Ospreay. Maybe that's how they get around doing that.
Maybe.
But at least that's going to be a little bit of a reset in some fashion. So that's one of the more interesting things going on for this. We could have title changes.
Might even do it tonight, by the way, before they get to the show.
You think they might pull the trigger now to give that like that sort of leeway?
They give it a little bit of heat going into it. That could.
Could be the case. Well, I mentioned this already, so let's get into this one. Eddie Kingston versus Brian Danielson. Continental Crown Championship on the line. Also on the line, if Danielson loses, he has to shake Eddie Kingston's hand. We've talked about this before. It's not my favorite stipulation. I get where they're going behind it. It's the whole, like, you need to respect me because I'm, you know, I'm not the traditional quote-unquote best wrestler the way that Danielson is. And I'd assume that that's how this match plays out. As Kingston wins, Danielson shakes his hand, and it's this big, like, you know, kind of, not to use the phrase crowning achievement with Continental Crown, but you know what I mean. But I can't imagine it going any other way.
Danielson's definitely winning this match.
You think?
Yeah, 100%. I really want him to. I don't know if I think it's going to happen, but I want him to.
Hmm. I mean, Kingston won the title. What? They won the Continental Crown at
December?
Yeah, December. So it's been like a couple of months now. But he'd also, prior to that, he'd already been New Japan Strong Openweight Champion for a while. He'd been Ring of Honor World Champion for a while as well before getting the Continental Crown. So he's kind of lived that dream now. And now it's time for Danielson to take that championship to the next level. I think it would just be weird and something that I know what Danielson's like, or at least obviously I don't know him personally, but we've all seen and we've all heard about the fact that he'd lie down for Tony Khan's mother if he asked him to in the ring, essentially.
And give her a 5-star match along the way.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that he needs to hold a championship in AEW, needs to be part of their kind of history and their lineage in that way. And I think the Continental Crown is the perfect one to do it, because it makes him Ring of Honor world champion, which means he gets to work some more stuff in Ring of Honor. He's already doing stuff with New Japan, so he gets to be a strong openweight champion as well. And yeah, he's doing big stuff with AEW still and up until his retirement. And I think the big match at All In, probably his last one, or at least one of his last big shows, would be him dropping that title to someone else, be it an Ospreay I don't know. There's multiple different choices that you could do. He could have a great match with, because he has great matches with everybody. If you have him lose to Takeshita at All In as well.
See, that's the thing. That's the belt that I'd rather Takeshita win. Is this one rather than the international at this point?
Oh yeah, let's see
what Danielson can do with it if he wins. And I would, for the record, I'd prefer him to win. I'm very firm at this point in. I get Eddie Kingston. I get why people love this dude. It's just one of those situations where it doesn't click with me in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I get the vibe. I get why he's everybody's guy. But I'd rather Bryan Danielson just hold titles.
I get to think of saying that, like, obviously I love Eddie Kingston's, like, promo ability and the way that he wrestles as well. And it's going to sound a bit of a weird thing to say here, but I think he's won too much now.
Yeah, I can kind of agree with that, though, because the part of the appeal of him is that underdog spirit.
Yeah. And it feels like he's won too much now. And they've obviously, this is kind of in a way a bit of a rubber match as well, because they shared wins against each other in the actual Continental Crown tournament leading into the Continental Classic, should I say, leading into this. So they're kind of one on one in that respect. And I think that we could probably have a situation where Danielson gets the victory, but it's super hard fought, and so he does decide to shake Eddie Kingston's hand anyway, even though he does win the match. And so you kind of get a little bit of that friendliness,
like,
or that.
Like
that,
they
that,
both that win respect. Because he won the respect.
Yeah. Yeah, he gets the respect to Danielson, but Danielson gets the Continental Crown. And I've been super into the way they've built this match as well. It's probably one of, if not the most well-built match on the card, just from a storyline perspective. It's been, in a way, stretching all the way back from November to now. So yeah, I think that this is a good way to culminate it.
If it ends up being what I'm expecting it to be, which is just Kingston retains, he gets the handshake and that's it, I feel like that's underwhelming. So I'd be more down for the idea of Danielson winning and then shaking his hand afterward. I think that'd be a much cooler way of going about it.
I think Danielson shouldn't even shake his hand. Bryan Danielson is such a good hater. He's such a wonderful human being, but he's also really good at just being a piece of shit. And I think if he just keeps it going, and look, sometimes in life that happens. You never gain the respect of the person that you've been longing to. And I think it'd be funny.
I wonder if that's anything that's ever happened with any of us. Are you aware of anybody that's trying to get your respect that you're just like, nah, fuck that guy or something?
I'd be hard pressed to think of anybody who would be longing for my respect, but you know. Maybe they're out there.
The obliviousness like that sometimes can be fun. But yeah, I'm
as much as he wants it, I'm not giving Rob anything.
Wow.
Not even some leeway points on the fantasy league.
Definitely not that.
that only makes me respect him less.
I like the people that obviously they don't know our chats outside of this. Callum the other day had said he's going to wait to make a trade until the WrestleMania card is finalized, and Rob's response was just an ellipses.
Yeah, it's like, oh shit, like I didn't even think about that. Jerk.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, people don't know about like the conversations behind the scenes, stuff like that. But yeah, I don't know if people think that I actually don't respect Rob.
No, I think if that was apparent, it would be pretty clear on the podcast if you were just like, no, yeah, fuck, I mean, this
we
asshole.
We only do about 100 of these a year.
Oh, no, but I kind of come across with the, like, just from my tone of voice that I just don't respect anyone or anything.
That's because you're English.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. I do have a superiority complex that way. But you guys kind of help with that, in which case I kind of, like, respect you in that, right? I respect your ability to make me feel good about myself.
It's good to know that you're useful.
This is a fun podcast.
So yeah, I'm gonna go Kingston here. What's your ultimate picks?
I'm gonna go Danielson.
Yeah.
All right, so let's switch over to pick a number between 1 and 5.
Should we not just do more Blackpool Combat Club stuff?
Yeah,
why not? We could do that too. Why not? Well, pick a number between 1 and 5 anyway.
4.
All right, we'll do that one next. All right, so then tag team match. We have got FTR against Blackpool Combat Club. That means it's Dax and Cash against Mox and Cast. They're never going to refer to it that way, but that popped in my head a second ago, so I'm going to. And this is just a match. There's nothing on the line as far as I'm aware. No number one contender thing, but of course they could always spin it into something like that. And I mean, it's FTR against Claudio and Moxley. Like, it's going to be a good match, even if it's just, you know, a match for the sake of a match. I'm thinking FTR wins.
This isn't in a cage. They, and I need to give some context here because Tony doesn't watch AEW TV. On Collision, Mox and Castagnoli were cutting this great promo about Greensboro and tag team heritage, and I'm going, my God, 2 out of 3 falls. Steel cage, what are we gonna do in Greensboro? And they're just like, yeah, we accept your challenge to a match. Oh, okay. I mean, still gonna rule, still might be the best match on the show with the way that these four guys work, but I was expecting a little bit of spice.
So they had the in the build up to this, they've had a match on Dynamite which ended on a time limit draw. I mean, this is one of those matches where I'm kind of like happy about the rankings, even though it's not being applied as consistently as I would like. And these two teams are ranked there, and so the reason why they're going to fight each other is not just because of the animosity they've shown towards each other. It's because, well, one of them's going to win and potentially put themselves in position to challenge for the tag team titles pretty soon afterwards. So the one thing that continues to get in my mind, especially with FTR recently, is like, what is actually happening with Cash Wheeler and this court situation? Because are they really going to continue pushing them and using them on TV until they find out that he's either, you know, convicted or innocent or not being charged or anything along those lines? Because it just feels a little bit, I don't say icky, but it feels a bit odd to just see them just wrestle as if nothing's happening outside in his personal life.
Last I had heard about it, I think that he's like heading to trial and most likely going to be charged with like some sort of jail time, right? Let me double check about that, because maybe things have changed since then.
See, the only I can only assume, no, I can't assume, but like one way or the other, but I can only think that the reason why they're still using him on TV as frequently is because they don't think that he's actually going to go to jail over this. Like, he might get, you know, community service or something along those lines, but because at least there must be at least some thought that he's not actually going to go to jail over this, because we're just using him on TV and we've known about this and everyone's known about this that's followed it along for months and months at this point. And because, like, we were chanting Wheeler's got a gun at All In.
That's my favorite chant, by the way.
And so, yeah, it's been all the way back since like August or July time that we've known about this. It's been like half a year since then, and they've continued to utilize them. So I for that reason, and maybe it's a dumb reason to do it, that I think that Blackpool Combat Club's going to win. Also, because it's just something slightly different, because we don't really see Moxley go for the tag titles that often. He's only really done it with Kingston at one point. So, and yeah, I know that we'll talk about the what will be the main event of this show and what that could mean with, like, oh, FTR and the Young Bucks go for it another time. But I think that we should I would like to see a bit of a mix-up by having BCC get a victory here. So that's what I'm going to go for, but either way, I'm looking forward to the match itself.
So, addressing Cash first, I'm shocked that this is still ongoing, because it seems like whatever it is, it's just somebody who's decided, yeah, fuck it, we're going to really go for it. You know, and like you said, Channing Wheeler's got gun in Wembley. They haven't stopped pushing them, so it's not like everybody's not aware that they probably know more than we do. And that's not the reason I'm going with BCC. I'm going with BCC because it's fresh. I do think you should get Castanillion Mox against the whoever the champions may be. And actually, if Sting wins, maybe they vacate it, and maybe it's like a tournament or something. I guess we'll see. But I'm going to go BCC. And this is just another great thing on Mox's AEW resume.
I'm going to go FTR. And I will explain that a little bit later when we get into the main event discussion. But really quickly,
Think that Wheeler's going to pull out a gun?
No, I don't think it's going to happen there.
I'm going to shoot on the guy.
I'm not able to find any information about this, but there's one thing that said that there should have been a hearing for Wheeler's case on the 20th. And we're 8 days past that, and I can't find any more information about that. But it's one report thing says here, if he is convicted of anything, he could be in prison for up to 5 years. So that would naturally be like a huge no-no as far as that, but I guess until that were to happen, why would they bother to keep him off television, you know? But I'm leaning a little bit more towards FTR winning this, if not just because it sort of seems like they need to kind of win that to offset BCC having like a one-up on them, because what was the singles match? I'm blanking on it. It was like Mox beat Dax, I think.
Yeah.
So it's like they technically have kind of one-up on them, but it could go either way, and I wouldn't be shocked. But I'm leaning towards FTR for a reason I'll get into in a little bit here. In the meantime, let's switch over to that the one that was just picked on that randomizer with the number. Let's talk about the Timeless Toni Storm against Deonna Purrazzo AEW Women's World Championship match. I've been, you know, pretty vocal about how I'm not into the Timeless Toni Storm character as much as I'm supposed to be. It's not necessarily that you're supposed to be, but she is a huge focal point, and it's just not working for me. And I know that you guys kind of agree to a certain extent too, but I think you probably would also agree Deonna's not winning here.
Oh yeah, I think
we know where my heart is. Mm-hmm. But my head says Toni Storm's too over for Deonna to just come in and win. But also, and I've said this before, but if Deonna can come in and just get a title shot, shouldn't Mercedes just come in and be given the title? I mean, realistically, career-wise, if we're doing, you know, a Venn diagram, Mercedes has main evented WrestleMania. Like, she should probably come in and immediately feud with Tony, if that's going to be the case. I'd rather Deonna win here and then Deonna and Mercedes feud for the championship in what would be my favorite women's match ever, probably. But yeah, Toni Storm's probably going to win here.
Yeah, I have a bit of, Tony's right in the sense that I'm not a huge fan of the Timeless Toni character. It's very hit and miss for me. But I understand that a lot of people love the character, but that's kind of also an issue with this match. in that they have built it up. They have told a story with this one. They haven't like shirked it at all, or just saying, oh, they're just throwing a women's match on for the sake of throwing a women's match on the card. It's actually been given a good amount of TV time, and they've been wrestling a lot. They've been doing multiple women's matches per show more often recently. And I think that, but the issue is that Toni Storm is the heel that the crowd love, and Deonna's the babyface that they're a bit like ambivalent towards. So it's going to make the match a little bit difficult to go through, because Tony's going to be wrestling as the heel but get cheered for it. And when Deonna's making her comeback, she'll probably get booed or not get much reaction. It just hasn't really... It's the issue with Deonna is that she's obviously a great wrestler, but it's...
She was over in TNA.
Oh, yeah, she was over in TNA. But the issue is that I think her style of wrestling... You need to spend time with appreciating her work as a heel before you start to enjoy her as a babyface, because it's a very technical, submission-based, ground-based style. She's not very flashy in that respect. And it means that in the same way that, like, I know it's like it's not in the same kind of league, but if you look at like a Kurt Angle, he couldn't do the stuff that he was doing as a babyface to start with. Even though they try to, you need to do that as a heel before people start to appreciate your work, and then they kind of naturally turn you babyface. Whereas they've just gone straight in with Deonna as a babyface, and she just doesn't, maybe it's just me, but she doesn't give off babyface vibes.
She's much better as a heel. Much better as a heel.
Whereas Tony is doing a lot of heel shtick, but because she's funny, the crowd like her.
Yeah, it's a different dynamic for sure.
Wasn't the original thing a face turn? Didn't she like actively cost Saraya the title? Not a babyface move.
Well, it just depends on like what the reasoning for doing that is. Because then she then took the title off of Sheeta rather than taking it off of Saraya. So,
by the way, that's another match added to the 0 Hour. We got Ruby Soho and Cool Hand Ange against Saraya and her brother. Just thought of that right now as I said that.
Yeah, because Zodiac Zack is, I guess, on the roster now, and at least some kind of contractual action.
Yeah, I mean, he was doing shows for Ring of Honor for a little while before getting now onto AEW TV. So, you know, that'd be a fine match to put on as well. But I think that... I think that this match, as I say, I think it will be a bit awkward or odd to sit through because of the reactions that it's going to get from the crowd, which won't be in line with the flow of the match. But yeah, Toni Storm's going to win because she's the bigger star out of the two of them right now to the AEW audience, and eventually she'll be dropping that title to Mercedes, most likely. But I don't think Mercedes should come in straight away and get that shot because, I mean, you say, like, Deonna just came in and got a title shot. Well, she joined in that January, and that's when the ranking started, and she ranked herself up by winning loads of matches. So,
yeah,
so
I want
Mercedes to do the same thing, even if it is a Mercedes.
But you know what I mean when I say, like, she went straight for the title.
She should be fighting for the title. I think Mercedes should be fighting for the title by double or nothing.
Absolutely.
But she should have matches in between that, like against Serena Deeb, Mariah May, people of that ilk, maybe even have a match against Deonna as well in the build-up to it.
Well, what needs to happen, realistically, is Toni wins here, right? She comes out on Big Business and says, yes, the rumors are true. I've heard that you signed the big free agent. And where the fuck is Wendi Richter? Let's go. And then you hit Mercedes music, and the Mercedes beats the shit out of her and gets a pop and fights Deeb on Collision or at Dynasty or whatever. I don't know. I'm assuming that's going to be a show. You know, and you do that, and then you get Mercedes versus Toni at Double or Nothing, and Mercedes wins. That is what I would do.
Pretty much. Yeah. The route, how you navigate to get to that point could be changing, but... You know, I don't like when they do this in AEW where somebody comes in, they're immediately shot straight to the top. They usually fail to win whatever that is, and then they drop. Yeah, because look at what happened with like Ty Valkyrie against Jade Cargill, or like when Brian Cage came in, or when
Ruby's the best example.
Yeah, Ruby. There's so many examples of, we just signed this, to use the analogy that we keep using of like Tony Khan playing with the action figures and the shiny new toy. It's like, oh, this is my brand new thing. It's the coolest thing in the world. Okay, now I'm done with it. And then they have to like rebuild themselves up. And I would have rather had seen Deonna start a feud with Serena, for instance, and like do something there and then build up towards that. But I don't know who they would have slotted in here in the meantime. It's one of the problems with the women's division, is who else would have been fighting Toni Storm at this event without it just being like another fucking match with the same, you know, another Sheeta match or something. Static probably could have been the best option for it. I would have been
Rosa as well. Would have been a choice.
Yeah, Rosa, because where the fuck, like,
true.
I mean,
yeah, that could work.
Based on what we saw on a Collision, she seems to be, she's going to be slotting in with the, yeah, with LFI. So that'd be good. It's good to see some more intermingling of like women into like men and women factions rather than just strictly a men's faction and women's factions.
Yeah, can the BCC go ahead and take Serena Shafir? Well, I prefer Serena, but Mox
Serena
that they want Marina. So go ahead and take her. Like, start leveling her up.
Meanwhile, Gunther is like, "Yeah, we're not adding any women to Imperium. What the fuck are you talking about?" There was an interview recently where he's just like, "Nah, not happening." But yeah, Deonna's losing this, and then you can only hope that she does something in the meantime to kind of bounce back, where she's not just where has she been? Not even like, where is she now? Where has she been for how long? Like, when's the last time that we saw Baker?
Actually, that's how she loses. You have Deonna say, "I'm bringing someone to Revolution to level out Mariah May." Bring out Britt Baker, and then Baker turns on Deonna, and you're off to the races. You have a personal grudge for no championship, but two top women's wrestlers.
I wouldn't be opposed to that.
I'm booking a show here. That's...
In one way or another, Toni Storm's winning this match.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there are a couple other titles that I do think could potentially change hands. That one's not one of them, but one of them that definitely is on my radar, as far as like, I'm pretty much like set in stone that I'm assuming this is going to change hands. Orange Cassidy is going to drop that AEW international title to Roderick Strong.
And that will be for me. As we all know, I love myself some Roderick Strong. I love myself some Undisputed Era. You know, Undisputed Kingdom has some great beats to it as well, but this will be a great move. And we'll allow Orange Cassidy to kind of move on, because he probably wasn't supposed to be champion again, let alone for...
totally wasn't supposed to be
champion. As long as he has been, because that was supposed to go to Mox.
Mm-hmm. That went over to Mox, that injury happened, it went over to Phoenix, that injury happened, it went back over to Orange Cassidy to be like, can we just hit the pause button on this and figure it out later, and... Now they're going to come back around, and it's going to be Roderick Strong. And this is one of those like perfect titles for somebody like Roddy, where the international title, even though it doesn't have the same flair that it originally did with the All-Atlantic title being like passed around with Pac fighting people, you know, all over the place, which kind of already, we've talked about this before, but the Continental Crown is like not served the same purpose in some ways. But yeah, the idea behind it, if it were to continue to do that, or even if it's just the European Championship equivalent with TNT being the Intercontinental title. Roderick Strong's not going to win the AEW World Championship. Anything can happen, but it's most likely not going to happen. And this is his ceiling in some ways. But he's going to do a damn good job with it, I would assume.
I think his ceiling might be that Continental Crown because he's got the Ring of Honor title attached. But
would you put that above the international? Or to me, they're kind of like on par.
Well, supposedly you're fighting for three promotions, so I think you'd have to. But I get what you're saying. But no, I think Roddy is going to be a great international champion. I wish this happened sooner. I'll be very upset if he doesn't win. Like, I can't see a scenario where that happens. but I'd be very upset about it. And Roddy will go on to be a great champion because it's kind of a champion that we haven't had yet. A heel who isn't going to be a chicken shit entirely, but is going to be like the closest thing you have to, you know, a workhorse IC champion. A traditional workhorse, I should say, because Cassidy has been a workhorse. But it's with that caveat of like, oh man, he's so lethargic, but he's, you know, turning on for these matches. Can he continue at this pace? Whereas this would just be a traditional, I'm the workhorse, come take my belt. You know, then we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, as with pretty much most of the matches on this card, I'm looking forward to the actual action itself. I think that Roderick Strong's obviously a great worker, and Orange Cassidy has great matches with everybody, so I assume this will be no different. Yeah, I see Roderick Strong capturing the title here. I think that you need to at least make good on some of the promises that they've that the Undisputed Kingdom made in order to try and keep them still going. Obviously, Taven and Bennett have the Ring of Honor tag titles, and adding another piece of gold to that makes the faction feel a lot more, I guess, worthwhile. Real and a lot more tangible. Yeah, a lot more tangible and real and worthwhile and all that stuff. Because otherwise it just feels like, okay, you're just hanging around until MJF comes back and then going to your own little feud about that instead. So yeah, give Roddy the title here, Orange Cassidy's. It's amazing that he's like held this title for like essentially a year with an interrupted month and a half in between. He won it at like January 23, didn't he? So yeah, it's but he's been a very, very like credit to that title, a big credit to that title, and having having Roderick Strong win it, I think that's a established big name to take the belt off of him. And also, I guess the bigger question would just be, where does Orange Cassidy go from there? I'm hoping to win the trios titles with Best Friends.
I think you go in that direction. He could be somebody that fights Joe in the future for the world title. He could be fighting Christian for the TNT title. I don't think he's going to be winning a singles title anytime soon. Kind of put that out there as a prediction that I'll go so far as to say, unless something weird happens, I don't think Orange Cassidy's winning a singles title at all in 2024. But trios could be there. They could also pivot around, and maybe Orange Cassidy can win the ROH tag belts from Taven and Bennett in some way. He'd be like a Cassidy and he's got a bevy of friends. Be like him and Danhausen, it could be him and Hook, it could be him and they've done plenty different people like tagging with Orange Cassidy types of scenarios. So I'm sure whatever he does, I'll enjoy it, because Orange Cassidy is like perpetually one of my top three favorite people in this company. I think that the match is going to be good, one of the best of the night, I would go so far as to say. I think that the title change makes perfect sense. Roddy would be a good champion afterward. This is one of those like no lose scenarios, I think. If there's one title that I'm expecting to change hands, it's this one for sure.
Yeah, I'd have to agree.
Now, another one that could change hands, though, is Christian Cage against Daniel Garcia for the TNT title. I'm a bit iffy on that one. Because I could see a scenario where Garcia wins. I could also see that there's maybe not necessarily any reason for Garcia to win right now.
I think as much as, okay, even though I'm a big fan of Edge and Christian, the rivalry is a bit long in the tooth for me. I think they need to settle that score. And it's been so heavily based around the title that it needs to culminate in a match for the championship. I respect Copeland not doing another match with Christian to not, you know, wear it out too quickly. But I was really expecting a ladder match here.
Well, we actually don't have a Face of the Revolution ladder match. For that matter, yeah, we haven't had a Casino Battle Royale in a long time, have we? or a casino ladder match.
I imagine they'll bring it back for Double or Nothing. But I was expecting a ladder match here between Edge and Christian, and the Garcia stuff is cool. A bit weird because Edge is living in North Carolina. You would think this wouldn't be the first pay-per-view he misses. But, you know, he did a match here, and Garcia will have a great match, and Christian will continue having the best run of his career. But I don't see Christian losing the belt to anyone that isn't Adam Copeland.
But ordinarily, I would probably be in agreement with that because you have been very much honing the Christian Cage and Adam Copeland feud over the title, and they've clearly done the injury angle, so there's a bit of a respite before you then come back with Copeland getting the victory over Cage in some sort of like ladder match or TLC match or something of that ilk. But I think that you have to, I think sometimes you just have to let circumstances take over. And like Daniel Garcia has gone so over so quickly since the Continental Classic, his star has been on the rise. And I think that you have to deviate sometimes just to go with the hot hand. And the hot hand right now is Daniel Garcia. I think you could pivot into a situation where Copeland interferes in this match, causes a distraction, and that allows Daniel Garcia to get the victory over Christian Cage, wins the title, and you make the Christian Cage-Adam Copeland final match just a blood feud-type ladder match. Or you could even pivot into a situation where you have Daniel Garcia get the win, and Adam Copeland doesn't really know how to feel about it because his goal was to beat Christian for that title, and now Christian doesn't have that title anymore. And so does he go after Daniel Garcia? Does he end up turning heel off the back of that? Does it lead into some sort of weird now alliance between Christian and Adam Copeland instead? So yeah, there's multiple different routes to go with, but if it was up to me, if it's my choice, I would go with Daniel Garcia winning, because I think it would get a great reaction, and I think that it would be an interesting new dynamic to the TNT title, because Christian Cage, in similar way to Orange Cassidy, has held that title or some version of that with between him and Killswitch for the best part of a year. So it might be good to go for a different dynamic where it's a younger guy holding that title and having like matches every like week or 2 weeks to defending that title against an up-and-coming other star. So yeah, that would be my choice. I'd go with Daniel Garcia winning, and I'm actually just going to predict that Daniel Garcia wins as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind it. I just don't see them doing it. Like, if it was up to me, well, let's be clear. If it was up to me, Daniel Garcia would have been a member of the BCC, and he would have held championship gold long before this. But I wouldn't mind seeing him win. I just don't think that it's here.
I'm leaning more towards Christian's going to retain at the moment. But then again, if they're not going to do the whole thing with Killswitch being the guy that beats him for the TNT title and kind of, you know, offset the fact that he keeps simping to Cage and giving him those opportunities and stuff, then I don't know if there's a better person to be holding that belt next than Garcia. So I guess it depends on what their plans are for the future, because I don't want to necessarily see Copeland win this belt, have a big long title reign or anything. He's technically already a former TNT champion, even though it's only a few minutes before he dropped it again. But I want Garcia to finally fucking do something. Like, he's had so many opportunities to be in a position where he could have turned on Jericho, or it could have been, you know, the ROH Pure title. Like, that didn't really turn into anything more. So I'd rather them just give him the belt here and move on. But I think that Christian's going to retain. Maybe something will happen on Dynamite that changed my mind. I don't know. Now, the semi-main for this is currently still a three-way for the AEW World Championship. Samoa Joe defending against both Hangman Adam Page and Swerve Strickland. But there is an opportunity that they can take Hangman Adam Page out of this match, either for personal reasons that I don't know if there's been any clarification for, or for this like quote unquote injury angle. I don't know how that would change the dynamic of the match more so than just, okay, Swerve's flat out babyface. I mean, he's already pretty much the babyface here anyway. And I already think Joe is retaining no matter what. But I don't know if I would actually prefer it to be Swerve against Joe, or if I'd rather Paige to be in there, to be honest. How you guys feeling about that?
I want the three-way. They built the three-way. Paige has been the most interesting character leading up to this match because he's undergone this sudden change of heart. I want him in the match, and I think that unless it's a really serious personal issue, like unless it's like, you know, he's going to be their first kid or something, we know he's not hurt. You know, the Fightful Select report came out that he's okay. So put him in the match.
I'd say I think that the reason for that injury angle is not because he is injured. It's because there might be other reasons, other circumstances, meaning that he can't be at Revolution for some reason. And again, that's kind of just the speculation we have so far, and there's no real reason to pry any further than that. But I think that I would personally prefer the three-way because the story is realistically, it's Hangman versus Swerve. It's not actually, Joe's kind of just an extra character in this, which is weird to say about the world champion. And the dynamics work well between the three of them, but the whole story behind this is Paige costing, is more concentrated on making sure Swerve doesn't win the title than him winning the title himself. I'd almost like to see a situation where he thinks that he's so like convinced that Swerve's about to win the title that he somehow costs himself, like allows himself to almost get pinned or submitted by Joe to make sure that Swerve can't win the title. I think that'd be like a really like bizarre way of, I say bizarre, but bizarre, but in a way that makes sense, because just that's like the story they're telling is that Hangman hates Swerve so much that his only ambition going into this match is to make sure Swerve doesn't win the title. So even if that costs him his own opportunity to win the title, then so be it. And then that will lead into a final epic grudge match between those two, potentially a double or nothing. But yeah, I think that in order for that to continue the momentum of that story, then you need to have the triple threat here, because otherwise you're going to just have Joe beat Swerve, most likely. Which is, you know, fine. I'm sure it'll be a fine match, but I think you can do something more interesting with the three-way that you couldn't necessarily do with just having Swerve lose, unless he gets like distracted by Hangman that cost him the victory. If Hangman was already going to be there to cause the distraction, then he might as well wrestle in the match anyway.
True. Well, you guys think there's any way that Joe drops the belt here?
No.
Small chance, but I'm talking like 5%, 95%.
I'd be shocked. I
think they didn't want to just move to Swerve or whoever.
I think even though Swerve is definitely super over right now and is definitely on the course to being like one of the top baby faces of the company, they know what they have with Joe right now, and I don't think they want to end that just yet. Even if Joe winning the title was not like in the plans to start with the way that MJF's title reign ended, they know that he's a big deal right now, and he'd be a good person to put somebody else over to win the title, but not quite Swerve.
I kind of see Swerve's position here as being the babyface, even if it's like, wasn't necessarily their intention at first, the baby face that makes it to where you're going to boo Joe going forward. Like, he needs to have beaten somebody like Swerve to establish himself as full-blown heel champion. And I kind of almost wish that Paige wasn't here for that, so that it could just be more about Swerve. But I can see why they are making it a triple threat too. It sort of depends on where they're planning on going after this. If there's no future Hangman Swerve match, then I think it's a mistake. Then they should have just moved on. Either fashion, Joe's retaining. We're all going Joe. And they might do something tonight that switches up the dynamic a little bit, but wouldn't shock me if it's just exactly how it's been. And, you know, that last week's whole situation is much ado about nothing. Now, we do have one more match to talk about here. This is the Tornado Tag Team match for not only the AEW World Tag Team titles, but also it's Sting's retirement. So it's Sting and Darby Allin with Ric Flair, little caveat on that, going in as champions against Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jack, or Matthew and Nicholas Jackson, I should say. Ric Flair is teasing a turn that could be a tease to not do anything. Just, you know, a 180. Hey, you thought he was going to turn and he didn't. That's the swerve. Not Strickland. It could be the reason why Sting loses. Sting and Darby Allin could retain. And they could end up having something where they just vacate the titles afterward. Or Darby Allin has to pick a new tag team partner to go going forward. Which, there's a lot of different ways to go about this. So, before we start breaking down each individual thing, generally speaking, my prediction, and you guys might be able to sway me one way or another here, I think Sting and Darby Allin are retaining here. There's going to be a whole, like, we're going to vacate the titles, set up a tournament type thing, and that could be where we get Young Bucks versus FTR again, and that the Young Bucks win the titles then.
I don't think that Sting should lose, but I'm going to guess Sting's probably going to lose because you can't do the thing where Darby has to pick a partner because Darby's next thing is immediately Mount Everest. He's climbing Mount Everest in April. I think he said that takes 2 months.
Yeah, for the record, I don't think that's going to be the direction is Darby picking a new partner. It's a possibility, but I don't think it's happening.
And I think Sting will probably go out on his back. And maybe there's a Ric Flair swerve just to end it how it began. Who knows?
I think that there is obviously a chance that Sting and Darby Allin win the match because it would be a cool moment for Sting to leave AEW and leave his wrestling career undefeated in AEW and get that big monster pop from the crowd. But I think he's going to get that huge reaction, whether he wins or loses anyway. But it's just respectful applause and his chance to say some things and get a rousing ovation with like confetti coming down at the end of his career with the Young Bucks already having won the titles beforehand. So I would personally prefer the more straight forward approach of having the Bucks just win this match, because as I say, it will be somewhat deflating in the moment, but I think the crowd, if as long as the match is as good as it could be, that the crowd will understand it, and then obviously they'll boo the Bucks on their way out and they'll get a lot of heat off the back of it, but then you get the big celebration moment with Sting and Darby and other people involved as well. I mean, I've always said from the start that Flair's involvement in this is not to my taste, but it's what Sting wants. So, you know, hopefully once Sting is gone, that we don't have to see much of Ric Flair, if at all, for the remainder of his Woo Energy's contract with AEW. But yeah, I would say I'm just excited to see how this goes because they'll go all out. I mean, if you haven't read Darby Allin's, if you haven't read Darby Allin's like Players Tribune article talking about Sting and what this kind of means to him to be involved in his retirement match and how far he's going to be willing to go to make this as memorable a match as possible, then I think we're in something special. And the Bucks always have great tag matches. I'm sure they'll go the extra mile to make Sting look as good as possible in his final match. I'm not necessarily saying that this match is going to go like 20, 30 minutes. It probably won't, but it's going to feel quite special just watching, even as someone who didn't really grow up watching Sting, because Sting's I mean, Sting doesn't really have... He's one of those guys that doesn't really have a heyday. Because he's just been around forever. But when he, like, he's starting out in the 70s and 80s and all the way through to now. But I think that the way they've handled him, AEW's handled his run with the company, has been nothing short of faultless. They've really shown a lot of respect and admiration to his character and his service to the business. And I'm sure that they'll do whatever they can to make his final match just as special as they possibly can. It could be, in many ways, maybe not the best match in AEW history, but one of the most memorable matches in AEW history.
I look at it in the same way that if you're going to say what's the best Shawn Michaels match, you're not going to say Ric Flair from Mania, but it was still a very special match.
So yeah, and it'll be the first time that the tag team titles...
Hold on, wait. That doesn't apply here. That was Ric Flair's retirement match. Wouldn't the question be, was that Ric Flair's best match?
No, I'm saying in that kind of fashion, because that is one of Ric Flair's better matches from that time frame and all. But like, it's the importance of it isn't necessarily like, okay, bell to bell, is that the best Sting match in AEW history or the best Sting match in his career, or is that whatever, but it'll be one of the most important matches. Like, they'll do their best to, like, people will hype it up as better than what it would be if it wasn't Sting's retirement, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think this is a pivotal moment for them. This could be, because even though, look, the Punk thing went sideways, but the first dance was a huge moment for them. I think this is similar to that in the way that they're sending off a legend. They're getting his last goodbye. And quite frankly, we didn't think we'd get this. We certainly didn't think we'd get it here. We didn't think we'd get it with Shivani and hopefully JR on the call. Not a lot of times I'll say hopefully JR in 2024, but this is one of them. He should be on the call for this one. Flair's there. There's a lot of magic here. And I hope that it is everything Sting needs to be. I hope there's a lot of references. I hope there's a lot of special entrances. I want a magical match here. I want something that's maybe more in the lane of WWE, even though WWE failed Sting miserably because they just couldn't get over their own bullshit that he didn't wrestle for them. Which is amazing to me, by the way, because they've handled Goldberg tremendously in his later years. But I'm glad that Sting had this run. I'm glad Darby has been able to get something from Sting. Honestly, for all the bullshit that you hear that the young guys in AEW don't care about the veterans, Sting is the exception in every way. Everybody loves Sting. He's been so happy to be there from the minute he got there. And I'm just hoping for a good match and a good night. And I do think if he's going to lose, maybe he takes the pin. Maybe.
If he because loses, he has to take the pin. If Darby takes the pin, that'll be weird.
Yeah. But it's a special night, man. I'm very excited.
Now, ultimately, if you have to pick, where are you guys going?
The Bucks of Youth.
The Young Bucks are going over, and it's weird. Like I said, he's 62 or something, and I just still feel sad that he's retiring. But it's sad.
64.
Christ, I'm still jumping off the balconies. God, okay, maybe we do get him out of here while we still can.
So you guys are going Bucks. I'm going to go Sting and Darby.
Yeah. So they're both, it's not like one of those ones where it's like super predictable who's going to win. There's definitely room for both possibilities in this one.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it might be the type of thing that once it happens, we end up being like, oh, this was their direction. no wonder they went in that way. Like, maybe the Ric Flair element is this whole entire time he was like, you know, I want to go out with Ric Flair screwing me over. And then it's like, of course he was going to do that. And then there might be like, of course they were going to be playing around with that. And that's not actually what happened, or who knows. But of course we're going to find out this Sunday. So as we go along with the rest of the week, there will be some adjustments to this card. I'll at least add one more match to the show and put that on the buy-in or the 0 hour. And any kind of other changes that happen on Dynamite tonight, we will talk about all those on the Hot Tags on Friday. So more pay-per-view point-esque stuff with Revolution coming up later on this week. And then, of course, the pay-per-view point post show, where we'll be live talking about all the stuff that just happened. We'll be on the webcams again, since that's going to be a thing pretty much going forward. I think that we've been enjoying doing that, and you guys have been liking seeing our faces and doing all that stuff. So we'll kind of keep that train rolling. And the AEW Revolution stuff will kind of take us into the next stretch of pay-per-view stuff, where we'll continue that road to WrestleMania and get into that for... I guess the next event after that would be Stand and Deliver, or no, technically it would be the ROH show, but that one we're probably going to lump into the Hot Tags. And
they're all the same week, for the love of God.
Like, it's fucking crazy. Yeah. That's going to be, you know, an insane week and all. This week it's just going to be Revolution. So hopefully an insane pay-per-view instead. But in the meantime, drop your thoughts in the comments section below. Tell us what you think is going to happen. What are you excited about? What are you not so excited about? What do you think about what we think? All that good stuff. And as you are clicking around on that stuff, make sure you also check out fanboysanonymous.com. Make sure you check out the Darkcast episodes that are out there on the Patreon and YouTube channel membership. Head on over to the link tree that you can find on amangotree.com for links to fanboy stuff, some Markout Moment stuff, and a whole bunch of other things. Of course, you can follow me at Tony Mango. And make sure you're following Robin Callum.
Yep, you can follow me everywhere at Dude Felice. You can check out my work on Fightful.com. You can check out Fightful Select, which has reports such as AEW Dynasty most likely being a pay-per-view in the month of April. So maybe they get there first. Maybe they go the week before Mania. Yeah, it should be a fun road to WrestleMania, and should be a fun Revolution.
Yep, you can follow me on Twitter at WigMaster14. Check out the power rankings every single Saturday or Sunday, depending on when I do get it out. It was a bit later this week because of the Elimination Chamber stuff. But check all that stuff out, and you can follow me on Twitter. Of course, I've already mentioned that. But you can also follow the Fantasy League over at www.fantasyleague.com to see how our teams are performing, who's picking up points heading into Elimination Chamber is just gone. Our teams have been finally updated.
Heading into the
final updates.
heading into Stand and Deliver.
Yeah, Stand and Deliver technically first, and then WrestleMania. Just so people are aware of the updates they made. So based on our final picks going into following Elimination Chamber, I've added Jay Cargill to my team. Rob has added Carl Anderson to his team, and Tony has added Liv Morgan, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the newest additions. We still have some trades that we can make looking up to it. As mentioned earlier, I'm probably going to wait until we actually know what the full WrestleMania card is until we do that, because WrestleMania is a big place to pick up late points, and with things being so close between me and Tony at the top, it will be make sure that we can score as many points as possible in the final hurdle. So keep following that along at www.fantasyleague.com.
Okie dokie, everybody. That's going to do us in for the AEW Revolution pay-per-view point predictions. Make sure that you follow us for everything else that's coming your way. Make sure you check out previous episodes, and stay tuned to smartcomoma.com for any of the article stuff that's there. Check out the Discord, as I mentioned before. Check out the Mega Maniacs on Facebook, and just have fun adjusting some more wrestling stuff over the course of the next few days until we see you next time with the Hot Tags. But for the meantime, adios. This has been another Smart Cow Moment, and we are being counted out.